So hi, welcome to Grown Eyes Podcast. I'm Shane.
I'm Glory.
And we're here with
Bryson from Topiary Creatures.
And we're asking some questions today about their new album, The Metaphysical Tech Support Hotline. So congrats on that, by the way. How do you feel about the response to the album so far?
It's been great. Yeah, this album's been in the work for a little over 2 years, so it's always like a big breath of fresh air for it to come out. It's funny, I talk to a lot of musicians, especially around Nashville, where people are like constantly on the promotion game, and people sometimes are like, oh my gosh, when you put an album out, it's the most like nerve-wracking thing because you have to get worried about like how it's going to be received and whatnot. But for me, it was kind of the opposite. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so happy with this. It's off my desk. I can like, I'm proud of it. It's in the world. I can't like go back and tinker with the mix anymore. So, but it's been good. I think for as little people that know about Topiary Creatures, like I'm always struck by like how passionate of messages and tweets we get about the album. So, yeah, it's pretty great. I went on like Spotify's little artist portal, and I love doing the math of like listeners to streams, and I think it's like the numbers added up to where like the average listener, at least for this last month, like listens to 6 Topiary Creatures songs. So nice. It's like, sure, it might not be like blowing up on any Spotify editorial playlist, but for every one person that listens to a single, someone else is listening to the whole album. So I think that personally, that makes me super happy because like that's how we wrote it, to be like consumed as a whole thing. So yeah, it's been good. It's a long-winded answer, but
yeah.
We've
been following you guys for a long time. It's been cool to see the small but mighty fan base grow, because I mean we've been chatting with you since the first record came out, when it was just you and you were doing it all yourself and all that shit. So it's been cool to see it grow. Album is fantastic as always. Very, very good. Very stoked about it. Happy to be here catching up with you and still chatting away. It's been a minute.
It has. Yeah. No, y'all are the sweetest for finding the music early and still gassing it up to this day.
Hell yeah. That's what we do.
Hell yeah. Mm, damn right. So is there any meaning behind the album title or cover art?
Yes, plenty. You know what? I'm actually going to take this off because I thought I could do it, and I'm like losing. I'm like running out of breath.
That was a good 5 minutes.
It was good while it lasted. I have a shirt on under this, I promise. Okay. Yeah. So the album's called The Metaphysical Tech Support Hotline, mm-hmm. and it's about this imaginary like helpline that exists outside the simulation we live in, and all the songs are like these calls that are coming into the line, and they're all about like glitches in our earth and reason and emotions, and just sort of like calls out to the void that are framed as like, you know, calls to this tech line that no one may be on the other end of, but like there's some beauty in getting to witness it. Yeah. So it was kind of a long time coming. It started from like a book of short stories that I have. I actually even wrote like a short story to go along with the record. And actually I can show you the album art is hanging.
Yeah. I was just about to call that out in the back.
Yeah. Hell it's an actual painting. That's yeah. So cool. I had a buddy, the buddy who did the album art for the last record was going to do this one. And then he wasn't able to. So I was like stressing myself out trying to paint it. So that took me like, 2 weeks to paint.
Wow. You did that yourself?
Jesus. Yeah.
Wow. That's fucking sick.
I know. My parents lovingly helped me go to art school. I got to use it somehow.
Oh, yeah. But is there any meaning behind that cover art?
Oh, the cover art? Yeah, it was. Well, the cover art's slightly more abstract than the title and the concept, but I wanted to create a picture of somewhere that felt like otherworldly, but there was still like, you know, I mentioned it being like a tech support hotline. So in the album cover, there's like a bunch of desks with these computers and books, and it looks like an office where people are working, but you kind of get the sense that all these creatures, like even if you could talk to them, they wouldn't like know how the hell to communicate with you. Like there's remnants of like, this is like a workplace. This is like somewhere you'd come for help or information, but everything else in it is like so otherworldly that it's like to the point of absurdity, which I felt like kind of that was like the emotion that I wanted to to convey with it to match the title. So yeah, it's I guess it's like sort of a literal interpretation of the album art, but yeah.
Yeah. I'd say
Cool.
it's pretty on the nose based on your description. I like when the album art is on the nose. You don't have to think too much. It's just like, well, it all just kind of makes sense. You know,
Yeah.
everything, all the whole package.
Sometimes you got to do that if you're like me and you name things the metaphysical tech support hotline. Like it does people aren't really asking for like another layer of abstraction on top of that. So
Yeah, you made it abstract enough. I'm curious when the album title came about, because like that's not something that comes up. Like at what point does that come up? Like, is it the beginning, or did that pop out? Like, I don't see that popping out in the middle of the writing process.
No, it was so the writing process actually really snuck up for me on this. Originally, so I always am writing instrumentals, like that is always going, but I really had like lyrical writer's block after the last record. And I was still wanting to write, but I wasn't writing songs. I was writing this like book of short stories that were like comedy, pseudo philosophy, short stories and poems that I was going to just like publish on my own. And it was called Snakes in the Walls. It was like sort of in a Shel Silverstein way, to where there are a bunch of stories and the book's named after one of them. And one day I was just like, what if I like just try to force one of these stories to go onto an instrumental track that I've been writing? That's what became Snakes in the Walls. So I was like, oh, most of the songs are already written. I just didn't even realize I was writing an album. So as I started writing more and more, the album title I toiled over for so long, and there were so many like shortlist names, but I realized that the common thread between all the songs were like investigating these weird glitches in like, I mean, glitches or errors or you know, inconsistencies in like human emotions and reason. That was kind of like the through line, and I wanted to make it still feel absurd and otherworldly. So, yeah, it definitely didn't pop into my head. I did what I did for work when I'm writing headlines. I'm like, I opened a Google document and I just wrote like over 100 names until one of them was like, oh wait, metaphysical tech support hotline. That's what I'm trying to say. So, yeah, it didn't just like casually pop up in conversation.
Gotcha. Now,
Makes
on
sense.
the note of the writing process, obviously you have a band behind you. I mean, we chatted with Nathaniel last time, as well. So the writing process, is it you putting together everything and then bringing it to the band and they play the parts on the record? Like, can you, I'm sure we've talked about it in the past, but can you refresh my memory on that?
Yeah, no worries. And it's definitely changed a bit. Like Nathaniel, who plays all the bass parts and some of the guitar parts, he's like much more involved in the writing process now. Most of it still is like me demoing out a song and then bringing it to the group live. And like I play drums on the record for this too, just because like I'm a drum nerd and I love playing them live. But we have a drummer who's a part of the band and plays with us live named Gibson, and he makes all the songs sound like a cakewalk. And he comes from like more of a like metal background, so I kind of like that part of the process when like a song is out and I bring it to the band, and then Gibson's like, we need a breakdown here. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. Like people are gonna like
It
that.
came
So
through. It, that influence came through on this record.
yes. Yeah. If you couldn't tell from like the one like just straight up hardcore track on there. And then Elizabeth has been like, now that I know that I can like ask her to sing parts, I'm like for most of the parts in this record, I was like, you wanna just like sing everything that I sang, and then we'll just like, because we have like very similar vocal ranges too. So I just like chopped up a bunch, and that was like really refreshing to know that I could like, you know, use her voice on the songs too, because I was getting sick of my own voice all the time.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
So, what song off this album took longest to write, and which one is your personal favorite?
Good question.
Thank you.
Took the longest to write, I'd say it was Cleaning Basil Out of the Pool, which is the closer track. Partially because I think I was so specific about how the production needed to add to the meaning of the song. So that song is about like the frustration of how like our minds will just like discard memories and nostalgic things that we cherish, like without giving us any warning. Like I'm sure like you've had the experience of like you hear a name of someone that you were like best pals with for like a short season in like elementary school or something, and you go like, holy shit, like I forgot about that person. Like there's something that feels like sinister and like wrong about that. And I the song was about like that feeling. So I wanted the production to be like all these sounds from our past, like swirling around and like making up the beat. But at first it was like I threw some samples in there and I'm like, everyone does that, it's not enough. So like the intro, I downloaded samples from like all these like childhood nostalgic things and like literally made a drum machine out of it. So that took like a really long time. And also that song took a long time because the outro, like as soon as I knew it was a con like sort of concept record about like this tech support line, I was like, I know all the voices are going to need to come like as a medley at the end. But gosh, like I must have re-recorded like every part on there like four times vocally just because it was so hard to mix. And I was like, I think there's like 11 different vocal parts going at the end. So I was like, I had to be so specific with like how I was recording them and whatnot. So yeah, that one is a beast. And then my favorite, I don't know, it kind of changes. I usually say Carsick on Inner Sheeran, which is sort of a sleeper pick. I think I only have one other friend who said that. Recently, though, I think Michelangelo probably my answer within the last week or two.
All right. Sounds good. Hell
Yeah.
yeah.
Hell yeah.
So had the track list for the album come about, did you guys write the opener of the opener, close to be closer, just shuffle around and see what fits? What was that process like?
Yeah, lots of shuffling around. Snakes in the Walls was the first song written, and then God is a Scared Kid at a Middle School Science Fair is the second song written. And I was like, for some reason, those always just fit really well together at the beginning. I was like, those are kind of the two moods of this album. Like, those need to be in the first handful of songs. But yeah, the opener and the closer got particularly switched around so much. Like, the outro of the record was originally on the intro, and they're in the same key. So they're meant to feel like, part one and part two of like the album tracks. But yeah, I think once I had the openers and closers, the rest kind of fell into place pretty naturally. And I also would like tried a little bit something different in the track listing here. Whenever there was like a little bit of dead space, I wouldn't be afraid to be like, oh, well, this song about my dog that like fits the theme but isn't really like it doesn't want to be a big song. It just wants to be a voice memo. I was like, I'll just put that in there anyway. Or like there's an interlude that I think is a second to last track that like I just kind of was a little more liberal with like letting myself include like transitional things to help the flow once I saw where songs needed to go.
Gotcha, hell
So
yeah.
you mentioned that the opener and closer are in the same key and basically kind of like sibling songs. Was that intentional while writing it, or was that just kind of like a happy accident?
I wish I could take credit for that being intentional, but it wasn't totally the I was just so frustrated with the opening song, Trader Joe's Frosted Mini Wheats, did have the ending part, like the long outro with all the overlapping voices and that little like keyboard riff that goes for a long time. And I was just driving myself crazy because I couldn't write an outro song for the record. And then I wasn't happy with the intro song. And I was like, oh, wait, maybe the intro song needs to be just like half as long. And then I found out that that piano riff was in the same key as the guitar thing for Cleaning Bass a lot of the point. It was just like as soon as I stepped back and like looked at all the pieces, I was like, oh, that's pretty clear. I just need to shuffle things around. But yeah, took me a second for the the wires to click there.
Yeah.
That's cool as hell,
And shout out to the song titles. They're fucking awesome. They're so
I'm
funny.
giggling hearing
Yeah.
it.
Yeah. Every single time you named one off, Glory was over there fucking giggling away. I'm like,
Oh my
these
God.
song titles are great.
They're so fun.
Thanks.
Yeah. So would you be able to tell us where your headspace is at while you're creating this record?
Yeah. Let's see, where's my headspace at? Honestly, like way more content than the last two records. Yeah, it's funny. I think especially in like punk and emo music, there's like this notion that you have to like be miserable to like be writing your best stuff. And I think some good art's come out of that for me, but being in like a more stable place emotionally and like financially and like where I live, like actually helped me like revisit some things from the past that were like, you know, like I talk a lot about religion and on this record. And I think when I've written about that in the past, it's been like so visceral, like, oh, I'm mad that this happened, blah, blah, blah. But I felt like on this record, there's been enough space from it to where I'm like, oh, I'm healthy now. I can think about this with like a fresh, calm perspective and have something like trenchant and interesting to say, as opposed to just like, ah, I'm emotional. I need to like make a sound about it. So, yeah. And that kind of took me by surprise too, because I like haven't been in like as like stable and happy of a place in like so many years. So, yeah, it took me by surprise that like a lot of good art and just like thoughts came out of it. So,
Oh
yeah.
yeah. Stability is good. It's always good to hear, you know, an artist say that they're in a good spot when writing a record because of what you said with the notion, because, you know, we hear it all the time, how miserable the artist was while making the art. But there is proof that you know, bands can write good shit even when they're happy. It's just not dark and depressing shit. It's happy shit. Not everybody wants to hear that.
And that's, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, some people want, I'm sure there are some people who will be like, oh, Bryson's not pissed anymore. Like, I don't want to listen to this record as much. But I don't know, the stuff that I'm listening to now is like, honestly, like a lot of instrumental music, or like, I really like fuck with like Emperor X or like Black Midi and these bands that are like, they're clearly just like writing because they're nerds and they have like interesting things they want to say, as opposed to like they just got out of a breakup and picked up a guitar. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that's the stuff that inspires me now too. So that's what I'm hoping to write.
Hell yeah. Emperor X is sick. I'm seeing them in May with the Front Bottom, so I'm excited to dive more into their
Oh,
music.
sick. Yeah, he's an interesting dude. I saw him open up for the Hotelier when they did their 10th anniversary tour here. And yeah, you're in for a treat if it was anything like our show. I'm seeing him again in April too. But yeah, he's just like, yeah, he's a really inspiring writer. He was like a high school something teacher, and he lives in Berlin, but he's from Florida. And I think he like is maybe legally blind, and like he's just such like an interesting dude. Like, I don't know. I don't think you can write such crazy songs unless you have like the specific kind of life that dude has. So,
Yeah.
big
Hell
fan.
yeah.
I can write about him forever.
Hell yeah. So how do you recommend your fans to listen to this album for the first time? Should you do it in the car with friends and talk with headphones on? Is workout album, party album? What do you personally recommend?
Yeah, I mean, go on a walk and put headphones on. Like, my favorite album experiences have been that. Like, you know, usually if someone puts out a record, I'm like, oh, I like that band, I'll listen to it in the car. But if it's like The World Is puts out a record, or like Porter Robinson puts out a record, I'm like, I'm going to the park and putting my phone on Do Not Disturb until I finish the album. So I don't expect people to like do that. So if you're not already a fan of our music, like, I don't know, just listen to it on good speakers, maybe. I would settle for that.
All right. Sounds good.
Good speakers, hell yeah. So this one should be super, super quick off the top of your head. I want you to describe this album for new listeners in three words. No more, no less.
Oh, man. Maximalist, sparkly, and incisive.
Sparkly, hell
Yeah,
yeah.
that's good. And in that same train of thought, is there a certain feeling or emotion you want listeners to have while going through the album?
Wow, I think it's really pretty song by song. I think I want people to feel like seen is kind of the main thing. Because my favorite like experiences, at least lyrically, are when someone says something and I go, oh my gosh, yes, that's me. How have I never said it like that? And also, how is someone else thinking the same thing? So I think there are a handful of lines like that that I've made sure to like clear out the mix so people can hear, you know, because they're the kind of lines that like I would have felt so comforted to hear like before I had written this record, just to know like, oh my God, someone else is like having this experience. So whether that comes in the line on home to any possibility that's like screaming about hating an old boss, or whether that comes in one of the quiet ones that's about like the urge to run away when you were a little kid. Like, I don't really have a preference on like what emotion accompanies that realization, but I just hope people like hear some of the lines and go like, oh my gosh, wow. Like, I'm comforted that someone else is
Oh
feeling
yeah,
that too.
love that. So you produce all the music, correct?
True. Yeah, Nathaniel helps with some of it too, but yeah, most of it's just right over there.
Do you mix and master it as well, or do you outsource
I don't master it, dude. Mastering is like another beast that I'm
I know.
so bad at. I've tried a few times and I clearly just, for as much as I think I understand mixing, I clearly just like don't understand mastering. But yeah, produce it all here, mix it all here. It's really interesting to me when I hear like artists who are, in the same vein as Topiary Creatures, like it's usually led by one person who's like really meticulous about the parts and the arrangements. I don't understand how someone separates mixing from that. Like it's so ingrained to me, like playing the parts and then figuring out how they fit together. Like I can't separate it. Like, because sometimes I'll put a whole part in there just to fill like a certain frequency or just to fill like a certain dynamic spot. So, yeah, definitely mixing all this stuff in house. I don't know how I would ever not do it that way. I would be like way too protective of it.
Fair enough. And now, with being so close to the music, do you struggle at all with knowing when to stop?
100%. Elizabeth calls me on that all the time because I will like, gosh, I think there's like, yeah, I don't even want to open the folder of like how many different versions and exports there were of all these songs because it's like, it's abysmal, like hundreds. And also, I struggle with knowing when to stop when it comes to like feature creeping on a song. Like, I think so. I do like the albums in like side A and side B for the Logic file, so everything can like flow together and have consistent sounds. And I think it was like up to 400 something layers. Like, I truly do not know how to stop when it comes to like, yeah, producing stuff or tinkering with stuff because at a certain point, it's like nobody's gonna notice this except for me. So,
Yeah. I would assume, like, obviously Elizabeth, but the rest of your band around you is like, dude, that's enough. Like, just fucking, can you please just send it out for mastering? Like, it's over. It's done.
yeah, 100%. And I think they help me a lot live too, because I can definitely like be an obsessive like little hermit producing in here. But when band practice comes around, it's like, oh, that's right. It's so fun to like feel these songs and play them live with everyone. And we can picture our friends in the crowd and they're not going to care that that chord phrasing is not the exact same as I played it on the record. So, yeah, they definitely help me loosen up and help me not be so precious with the songs too. It's almost like, the live show has taken like a separate life apart from the albums, which I kind of like too, like give someone a little bonus if they come see us at a show.
Hell yeah.
For sure. So, are you able to touch on any particularly challenging or standout moments from the creation of this album, positive or negative?
Standout moments. Yeah, there's been a handful. One thing that I think was kind of interesting that was like a roadblock in creating this album, I might have mentioned it a little earlier, but I like really wasn't inspired to like write songs again after the last record. So I was working on that short story for so long, and there's this kind of like strange moment of like I'm not writing punk songs right now. And that was for almost like a year. I was like, I for some reason it's just not hitting me. And there's this moment where I had to like be okay with that. And like there's that great quote, everything, I don't know who said it, but like everything good is downstream. Like I think I was holding on to like, oh, I have to like be writing this certain kind of thing because that's like gonna be well received, or that's what, I have identity in. And as soon as I like let go of that and like floated downstream, so to speak, and let myself get way into writing, this silly little short story book that I was working on, I is when I like wrote my best stuff and realized that I was actually like writing songs all along. So I think there was like a little fear of the unknown and a little imposter syndrome when that was happening. Also, I think with the album coming out, I've like noticed it's like Some of the song titles are like pretty pokey, especially for like some of my friends I grew up with back home, or like, for family friends and whatnot, who are like Christians, and they're like, I think they're thought-provoking titles on purpose, but I've been surprised at how much that has like started conversations. I think some of them good too, but that has been like a challenge as well. Like, I'm not trying to isolate anyone, I'm just trying to make people think about stuff. But yeah, those have kind of been the two challenges. But I think like the good side of like the unique ex I can't remember exactly how you worded your question, but like the good side over all of that is it's just like felt so fresh and so new writing this record. It's kind of made me fall in love with like yeah, just like producing and playing music all over again, because being in bands for like, I don't know, over a decade, it can kind of feel like you're going through the motions again. So for as different and confusing and hard and tantric at times it was writing this record, it's like stoked the love for composing for me even more.
Oh yeah, I
Love
love
that.
that.
Thanks.
And for this last question, we're going to shift away from music. We're placing the band in a horror movie. Who dies first and who lives until the end?
Oh no. Oh, Nathaniel dies first. Why do I know that that's the answer?
Oh.
The worst part would be he would be like, if this was like a zombie apocalypse type movie, he would be the one engineering the thing to save us. Because he's like literally an engineer and he's really smart. But I just feel like in true horror movie fashion, he would get taken out first. And then probably me. And I feel like Gibson would be like the guy who's like, he holds out for the longest. Like he maybe fights the most zombies or escapes the most tragedy for the longest time, but then gets killed at like 90% of the way into the movie. And Elizabeth is like found some crazy way to escape and start a new life away from everything.
Badass.
All right, sounds good. So as I said, that's all the questions you have today. Is there anything that you would like to plug?
I don't know. Check out the new album. If you come through Nashville, make sure to check out one of the Nash Grill shows. It's a booking collective that me and some of my friends started here, and we like have been helping hook up touring bands with like shows, and it's just like a really cool, inclusive space. So I don't know if anyone's listening to will listen to this and is like in Nashville or wants to be a part of the Nashville DIY scene, but there's some really cool stuff happening here, and yeah, happy to help anyone get plugged in, because I've been that person in a city before to where I'm like, I want to do DIY music stuff and I have no idea where to look or where to start. So yeah, it's cool that that's happening, that we can be that for some people. And then I don't know, check in on your friends. Yeah, I think that's about it.
Hell yeah. All
Hell yeah.
right. Well, thank you, Rasnah. It's been Bryson from Topiary Creatures, and we have been the Good Noise Podcast.